Hello and welcome to episode 136 of It's Not My Fault the OASG podcast is not popular, and it's not my fault that the script isn't fully ready in time. My name is Helen.
My name is Justin, and she says this, but it is totally her fault.
Listen, I said I have done up to this point online. I did not give any indication that I would be continuing any farther, and I did not send you any messages saying I had done it.
This is just, I don't know, just get that.
Justin, you've worked with me for 5 years now. You know how literal I am when I say things.
Anyways, we got lots to talk about, including one convention in New York that Justin went to. But that's going to be a little later. I did want to at least say what I've been up to before this whole Anime New York City event happened. I finally finished Fruits Basket, and the only thing I will quickly say is, Helen, why didn't I read this when I was growing up? Or I guess what?
Listen, I've been asking this question for years.
High school, college age. Why didn't I read this?
I've been asking you this for years, especially since you're like the same age I am, which was when Fruits Basket was popping off.
No, I already told you why plenty of times. I was a guy, and I'm like, that's too girly for me, and blah, blah, blah.
I knew other dudes who read Fruits Basket who were just...
It just didn't seem like my thing.
I don't know. I guess they were more confident in their masculinity. Or they were gayer. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, maybe one or the other.
Times were different back then. But now you realize, man, I've been missing out. But yeah, Fruits Basket finished. I did kind of wish there was this one character. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. She kind of is like Toru, though, so I can see why the anime cut her out. But it kind of... I kind of wish she was at that...
Or...
No. The brother's girlfriend. Yeah, because
I'm trying to think of who that would be.
Yeah, because they didn't even touch the boyfriend subplot in the anime for that guy, Machi's brother. They didn't even touch that plot line. But I could kind of see
I thought he was dating, like, the student council, like, treasurer, so...
No. Or if they did, I don't think they barely briefly talked about it, but no, it was somebody else. But I can see why, because she kind of acts like Toru in a bit, kind of like a space cadet a little bit, so I get that. But otherwise... Because there was that one moment where I was like, I wish I had adapted it. But otherwise, yeah, I can see why it was beloved. And, yeah, it was a really good series. Really, really fun. I caught up to... I read volumes 28 to 30 of Yone of the Dawn. And I'm probably going to stop here for a bit. Just so I can wait till my library gets a couple more copies. And also, from what I've noticed so far, most arcs finish around like 3 to 4. They have like a 3 to 4 volume arc, and while this one is still the 30th one, they're still concluding for Yone and the crew. There was a decent stopping point, so I said, you know what, I think this is a good time to take a little break, maybe jump back on it either late this year or early next year at our request from the library. But yeah, Yone Dawn, very fun. And then I'll talk about this a little bit more, because this one I've been reading recently. It's a long title. My Instant Death Ability is so overpowered. No one in this other world stands a chance against me. Funny enough, I was obviously not interested in reading this before, but J Novel Cloud, the manga version. So I read a bit of the manga. So actually not too bad. It's kind of fun. Maybe I'll just give it the light novel a try.
So I finally
spent some time with the light novel, and I kind of blew through it. Pretty fast. Most of these light novels are not very long, so that's a plus. Just to quickly sum it up, basic premise is a class got summoned to another world by some saint or sage, to be more specific, and the sage wants them to. She wants to find sage candidates. So out of this whole group, she's hoping to find one sage, like a top one of the stronger sage candidates. And if you're not really good enough, too bad. There are a few who didn't specifically get a gift. And apparently one of them was a guy who apparently can kill anything he wants. And I mean, literally anything. It's actually fun just how... It shouldn't actually be as interesting as it is, because it's like, okay, he just kills everything. It's like One Punch Man. It's like, just ends everything one punch. But it also does kind of add to the humor of it, because it's like, all these super overpowered guys or people are in this... just can't be stopped. Instant just says die. That's it. No action, no heroism or anything like that. Just die. They all just literally just die like that. There is some exceptions where there's one guy who has like you know, like in Slime has when Rimuru has Raphael and or the voice you know, that kind of character. There's this one scenario where that one of the characters asked for help, but then that voice is telling them, no, you're already dead. you can't get out of this. You're dead. You just want, you wanted to have all these girls fawn over you, and you wanted to have this little adventure. It didn't have to be this way, man. It didn't have to be this way. But if you want to stay alive, you could just like have me in this state of paralysis, or this state away from the real world for like maybe a couple more hours. That's it. But you're still dead. So it does take some scenarios that you might see in like other shows or isekai or powers and stuff like shonen stuff like that, battles.
Yeah, I was gonna say I can think of like two or three other titles off the top of my head with very similar premises.
Yeah. So, but it's pretty fun. Just finished 5. I gotta start 6 and 7. Definitely looking forward to seeing what others is gonna happen and what other potentially supposedly powerful people in this world. So that's the thing. They're really powerful in this world, but he's just super. This character's just super overpowered. And they can't really contain them, so it's funny, and it's fun.
I did not put down anything I've been reading lately. I mean, it's all just been stuff currently publishing at J Novel Club because, oh my god, Justin, we have so much news this week. I mean, a lot of it is Anime New York City news, but yeah, just so much to get to this week. So let's jump into it. Trying to figure out what are some of these things I actually know what's going on. Since you said Netflix's marketing counterattack, but that would imply that Netflix has actually been marketing their anime to start with. They have now finally made a Twitter account dedicated to just talking about their anime licenses. Interestingly, it does all of its tweets in both English and Spanish at the same times, instead of having like separate like Netflix US, Netflix Mexico, etc. accounts.
That is interesting. Now that you say that is interesting. Most other companies do that, but not Netflix. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, actually.
Yeah, since I don't know if Mexico is usually in the same licensing region as the U.S. I think it depends. I know South America definitely isn't always for the Spanish-speaking areas. Spain definitely isn't. So yeah, that was interesting. But yeah, so they were talking about some new stuff that's coming soon. And we've got a couple of quotes from them. Since 2015, Netflix has invested in more than 50 titles from Japan, highlighting The Naked Director as a positive example. What the heck is The Naked Director?
It's sort of live action, I think.
Anime and live action titles.
Yeah.
It has also established production facilities in more than 100 countries and territories outside of Japan. I mean, does Netflix even have their own, like, we own this production studio, it only does our things? Because
It's possible.
I thought even in cases where it's like a Netflix original, it was sort of more like a licensing, you know, or it's like we are hiring a production company to do this, you know?
I mean, it might be possible. I haven't checked, but it might be possible.
Yeah. Two notable titles were A Whisker Away, which was in the top 10 in over 30 countries. Top 10 movies, I guess? And Record of Ragnarok, which reached the top 10 TV series, I guess, in over 70 countries. According to Smith, many Netflix users are discovering anime for the first time through the service. So now your first introduction to anime is either going to be Mario Kata weirdness or very much horniness based off of, I think, an American comic for Record of Ragnarok.
Whoa. What?
Justin, have you not seen some of the more famous images from Record of Ragnarok?
But it's not an American thing.
Oh, okay. What is it then?
It's a Japanese manga.
Oh, okay. For some reason, when I saw the original art, it looked American to me.
Viz literally just put the digital out like a couple weeks ago.
Listen, Viz has started putting out like some American-made comics like Devil's Candy and everything, so...
That's like Viz Originals. They made... Or Radiant. As Viz Originals. This is, I think it's a Shogakukan title.
Okay.
I have no idea how you didn't miss that. But then again, the Record of Ragnarok anime, I heard, didn't do so well. So.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I heard a lot of people saying, yeah, this just doesn't look really great, you know? Yeah, it's supposed to be a battle royale, and the fights don't look that engaging.
You have humans, and they're facing the gods. And this is how you make it look? Come on, guys.
Also, yeah, I got the impression that they're, like, fighting, like, Greek gods and Roman gods, but Ragnarok is a Norse mythology concept, so...
Anyways, I put this in here because we obviously talked last time about Kadokawa, and this was also the Netflix that was also happening at TIFFCon. So Anime News Network finally got a chance to post more about it. So I felt like it made sense to have Netflix on this episode, especially since we obviously gone over a bit how they've marketed their anime, which is not really. But they have been making a push, at least I guess over the past... few months, especially now since we established that they have a Twitter account, which is way overdue. So
good. I mean, I've been on Twitter for like 11 years at this point.
So what you're saying is, never mind. We're not gonna go there. We're not going there today. But yeah, go on Netflix, I guess. Let's see. I was gonna. Yeah, that was, let's see, I wasn't sure I'd actually put this on here about the Shueisha and three other publishers suing this pirate manga site, because as far as I can tell, we still need, I actually want to see what's going to happen, because I feel like stuff like this has happened over the past couple years, so let me make sure I read this
As far as I properly. Can tell, what makes this interesting is that I think they're suing after getting permission or seeing it was okay by an American court for once, not a Japanese court.
Yeah, so NHK reported on Monday that a California District Court has approved Japanese manga publisher Shueisha's legal application to disclose evidence to identify and prosecute another party for copyright infringement. So, I guess they're assuming or thinking Manga Bank, which is the one that's listed on here, may be operating in California or somewhere in California. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm basically just waiting to see. I basically just wanted to eye that because I feel like we've had this thing before about piracy and stuff like that. But if there's a result, I think that's more newsworthy than this going through personally.
Well, you had a chance to take it off before the podcast started, and you didn't object, so.
I probably saw it, but I was like, okay, fair enough. I guess we'll, since we're on the subject of Shueisha, well, obviously, you know, at Shueisha, Shonen Jump is a major brand and everything, but as far as print circulation, it's definitely not reaching anywhere of its heights. It is now, the Shonen Jump magazine in Japan is now below 1.4 million in print circulation, and it's a big, continues to stay in client circulation. The magazine has gone in at least the last 8 years. This is like now nearing like about half of the January, March 2014 number of 2,715,834. So, I mean, at this point, it's like it's not totally surprising because most stuff is like there's more definitely more focus on digital. I can't say like obviously if COVID has definitely impacted. I assume COVID has also made an impact on the numbers as well. But just things are just moving more to digital convenience, honestly. So it's these numbers are not totally surprising, even despite the fact that it's Shonen Jump brand. And even if you know that these are going down, you know the Shonen Jump brand is still pretty big. So it is news. It is definitely still stuff to know. Because especially if Shonen Jump's not doing this, is having these type of numbers, what about the other manga magazines? So.
And then continuing with our potpourri of news, let's see. A ransomware attack has hit the Diamond Comic distributor. I think the official name is Diamond Comic Distributors and Alliance Game Distributors. So those are currently dealing with a ransomware attack. Those seem to be getting a lot more common these days.
I'm sorry, who is Random House? I mean, sorry, who is Diamond Distributing stuff for?
The comic distributor, the one remaining comic distributor in the U.S.
Yeah, but I'm sorry.
That people swear about regularly online.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to, did you mention any companies? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
If people are nerds enough to be listening to this podcast, they have probably heard of Diamond, the comic book distributor, by this point.
Fair enough. Yeah, so as I know, I just like think like maybe Udon, I think moved. I think they're using somebody else.
Yeah, I don't know if any of the manga publishers are still using them these days, but since Diamond still supplies a lot of the local comic book stores, which have, you know, their place within the manga ecosystem in the U.S., it's still notable. Also, guys, you just got egg on your face whenever you got to deal with ransomware attacks.
Funimation revealed on Tuesday that the My Hero Academia movie, World Heroes Mission, earned over $10 million at the North American box office. So
that seems like a wash.
Yeah, it's the 11th anime film to pass this milestone. So yeah, there was a big, big campaign over the past all of August. So yeah, that is pretty big news.
Hell, my brother went to see it.
That's it. Yeah. Mainstream, look at that. Totally mainstream anime, that totally is. Look at that.
I mean, he's always been watching some anime. He's just a much more picky consumer than I am.
Okay. Wait, what?
What do you mean?
Picky? Aren't you kind of picky
though? No, he's much more picky than I am.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Justin, me saying he's more picky than me does not indicate that I am picky. It just means that he has, look, it's an autism thing with, you know, focusing on specific titles and stuff for ages while not trying much new things. That's what's going on.
Okay.
Let's see. Bloomberg is reporting that the Chinese company Tencent, which we've definitely talked about before, I think that they, trying to remember.
They put in a stake in Kadokawa, 6.8. Right.
Yeah, they did that recently, and they're also they also recently acquired Soleil, I think that's how you pronounce it, Valhalla Game Studios' parent company. So they're definitely making more and more moves to diversify internationally, I guess it looks like. So that's interesting. Probably won't really affect us, especially since, as Justin and I discussed before this podcast, we don't actually play too many games. But
I do play. Wait. Well, I do play games. It just, you know, involved Fire Emblem and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're not taking over Imagination Systems. No, that's not the name of the Fire Emblem developer. Intelligent Systems.
And then, in a final bit of news. Oh, you got this?
I can do these two, since you're about to be talking for a while with Anime New York City. We have a couple of deaths, unfortunately, to report on. One of them was former mecha and effects illustrator, designer, and animator Kinji Yoshimoto, who passed away at 55, which is definitely far too soon. Although, I mean, just that job lineup alone, it sounds like he was never not busy, you know? I don't think they've said anything related to the cause of his death, but, you know, when you see somebody in the anime industry who dies that young, you tend to think they are probably living a very busy life, you know? And then we also have to report on the passing of Yoshika Ota, who's the voice actress of Kimba. I got this wrong. Kimba the White Lion's Leo character and Princess Knight's Sapphire. And she passed away at the age of 89 due to heart failure. So that's still sad, but 89, you know, that's a good long life, having voiced, you know, some of the most iconic characters from early anime. I was surprised to even hear she was still around, since I think of Princess Knight as a really old show. I guess she must have been fairly young when she was doing some of these roles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, or what? Maybe in, like, the... Well, yeah, 40, late 40s, 50s, somewhere around there, right?
I mean, my parents were born in the late 50s, and they are in their 60s now, so...
So, all right. We're going to transition over to licenses. Well, almost licenses, but somewhat topical, because Anime New York City happened, and I happened to be there all 3 days of the convention. So we'll get to all the stuff that companies had announced over there. I do want just to get a quick take, or just a quick thoughts on the convention.
Yes, please tell us about the lines, since that looked...
I would say all about the bad stuff really quickly, but I do want to just say in general, it does say something to return to a convention after, I guess, a year and 11 months. It's basically felt like a while. Like, and when I showed up there, it still felt like all this, like, similar stuff like that. But actually just interacting with people, and then I was dealing with all the people and the crowds and everything. it was certainly something to think about. It was definitely unusual in a sense, but it did feel at times kind of good just to, like, walk around again. Although my legs are saying, Justin, you did not have fun walking around that convention. Do not even lie to us. Do not lie to us.
Do you know how many steps legs. You did a day?
I have not even bothered to look at my phone. I just know it's going to be a lot. And then since we're going to transition over to steps, had a lot of steps on Friday because Friday, yeah, that was not. So funny enough, obviously, I want to say this. They did. Having a COVID, a vaccine COVID protocol was obviously necessary. You're not getting this many people in one place without it. That's definitely a start. If you didn't have it, it would be a non-starter. Not a lot of people would want to go. So this was
I mean, Otakon did speak differently, but Otakon didn't have a vaccine mandate.
Didn't they have some rules, though?
I mean, you had to wear a mask, yeah, but no vaccine mandate or anything like that, since people were still trying that out at the moment.
All right. I guess at this point, then you just figure out if you want to go or not. But I think for me, like, I would probably not have wanted to go if they didn't have to. You need a wristband to get in, and or to show you have vaccination and get in. So you have to get a wristband to get into the convention. But when I showed up around like 12-ish, close to 1, there was a pretty lengthy line when I looked outside the Javits Center. I wasn't actually in the Javits Center, just like outside with all the people, and I still haven't gone online yet. By the time I got to the end of the line, I was looking like 41st and 11th or something like that. That's like 2 long blocks away from the convention, and then we're still not even nowhere inside the convention. And by the time the line broke down, it was like 3:44. So yeah, obviously I have no idea what they were thinking when it came to these lines.
For those of us who don't live in New York, exactly how long did it take you to get your wristband?
It took me like 4 o'clock to get the first, just to get in and just get the
wristband. Justin, how many hours did it take?
I did say the time earlier, but okay, it took me about 3 hours and maybe 30 minutes. Somewhere around that range, which is really excessive. And if you have Friday passes, your day was done. Your day was basically done right there, because what's she going to do after the show? The exhibit hall and the artist area closes at 7. So it's like, because I guess she's got the panels. That's it. So yeah, they did make an announcement about that. So yeah, that was atrocious, surprising incompetence. Not really a good look. And I will put this in the part of unusual incompetence, because if you're projecting for like next year, it's unlikely they'll have this type of wristband policy. We obviously don't know what's going to happen, but if we're projecting, we would think maybe some part of COVID would be under control. Don't know. But the point is, they obviously could be better. And this convention for Friday was not. They did obviously change this stuff for Saturday and Sunday to tweak it to make sure people can come in at a more efficient time. So then they get over to the other problem that occurred. Aside from lines outside, there were lines inside the convention. Yesterday, there was a panel. I wanted to get to the J Novel Club panel at 6:30. There was also a Love Live event and a Crunchycast event in the same area. So the problem is there can only be so many people in that area. And security had to stop people from going into that section for a good while. Like, I showed up, there was a line of people there, and I'm like, why are people just here? And I realized they were just holding people there because there's just too many people that were still in the panels before people had to go into that section, and then there were people waiting to get in. I've been going to conventions for a while. I can say it's never happened to me before. So I don't know what happened there. That was bizarre. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if there's a case where they just misplaced everything. They needed another room. Just questionable stuff.
From other people I've seen on Twitter, it sounds like they actually had areas to line up for a lot of things, but they were just all got full. Like, they somehow underestimated how popular some events would be or what. That's what it sounded like. And to remind everybody here, Justin had a press pass, so that did not help you get through the vaccine screening any faster. That didn't help you get a seat any easier, which is the entire point of the press pass.
No. I vote no, not necessarily. From every time I've done the press pass, the only thing it does is you want to do interviews. They send you interview access if they choose to, or if you want to get press. If you want to get like press screenings, so like they have screenings, like Pompo and Bell. If you want to do that, you can reach out and say, "Hey, I'm interested," stuff like that. They don't really guarantee you first come, first serve like that. That for a while. I think some conventions do that.
When I've been to places like Otakon and KatsuCon, I feel like usually the first row of seats in every panel room are reserved partially for press. I feel like that's what
maybe some conventions do that, but I know for Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, and even at New York City, it doesn't really guarantee you, like, complete access. Like, you have to still kind of be there. And I kind of get why, because they just have so many people for certain things, so I get it. It's totally fine with me. It's just that there was some sort of weird incompetence that happened when they couldn't let people come into an area. I'm just saying, I've just never really had that happen to me before. It was very weird. And it's going to be other stuff I'm probably going to be writing about when I do the write-up for the whole convention, either later tonight, hopefully get up tomorrow, I don't know, I doubt it, but I'll see. And I'll talk about the panels separately. There were some good panels. There was one panel, I literally just stopped in there for like today, for like really briefly, until I had to go to Yen Audio panel, the Insight, the state of the manga industry. From what I was there, it was pretty interesting. Like, just a spoiler, if you thought Viz did well in 2021, well, you should see their 2022 numbers for the fiscal year. They had to make that distinction for fiscal year.
Wait, when did their fiscal year start? July or?
I think they were, I didn't really catch it that clearly, but from what I can understand, their fiscal year is like, they already like finished their fiscal year because I think they're going by how is in Japan's fiscal year. That's what they were saying at the panel. So it kind of already ended and they're already like technically on them to 2022. But they already, it was Kevin Hamrick. He has all the numbers, like he's like the marketing, or not marketing, but it's like he's the person who knows this. He knows all this stuff. So he's already saying like it's already knocked out all the 2021 numbers. And we already know 2021 was kind of big. But then I think you all kind of know 2020, this year in general, has been big for manga publishers. Just the fact that the supply chain of everything is just slowing everything down, so
people can get stuff like printed. It sounds like they're making bank. I know that during the Denpa panel that Ed Chavez was talking about how it's definitely getting even harder to find printers, and that's pushed me back their stuff, but it sounds like a number of their titles have been selling well regardless of that.
Oh yeah, in general, like I go to Artist Alley, I went to the industry booth, Jay Novakla had a booth, and Yen Press had a booth. They had books there. They are not there anymore. Well, there may have been some books were Genoma Club. I saw Other Side Picnic there, and then I saw some Undead Unwanted Adventure there. Everything else, Bookworm, Realist Hero, they had like the first volume series against Soki, all sold out. It was not there when I showed up earlier today. So Yen Press had the Spider spinoff, the Kumoko Sisters. They had the Toilet Bound Hanako-kun. First of all, it was funny. They had the Toilet Bound Hanako-kun advertisement in the back of their booth. So you could go buy the art book right here, but when I checked Friday, they sold out. So like, hey guys, I think you kind of need the book to be able to make this kind of statement. I don't know, just throwing it out there. They may have had some Saturday, they may have put some in Saturday, but that also sold out because I didn't see it anytime. I didn't see it at any point Sunday. So, but yeah, they also sold out some stuff too. Artist Alley has some stuff sold out. Like I saw some. Yeah, so one artist had finished. Basically, they did say on Twitter that they were unprepared, but they didn't have a lot of stuff, I guess, compared to usual. But they sold out. I guess that's the word, understock. And she sold out. So she had a free Sunday to just chill and go around the Artist Alley. But I saw some stuff. There, people were selling out, so I know if you were there, you'd definitely make a bank. That's why I'm like, Kodansha, why weren't you having a booth? They had that Attack on Titan thing, but that wasn't. I mean, if you're a Attack on Titan fan, that's big. But if you're going there, the thing is, you gotta avoid spoilers. So if you're like watching the anime and you're like, do I want to actually go there? I don't want to actually see the spoilers. So yeah, there you go. And then Viz obviously wasn't there. They didn't have a presence. They didn't have a booth there, which is unfortunate. So I think they would have sold out some stuff. But yeah, if you were at the convention, you definitely made, because it was packed. Today was technically probably like their lowest output, and there was still people. Mostly came in more in the afternoon, because when I got there early, it was surprisingly not that many people. Like I was worried about getting into the Kodansha panel, because I had super bad luck. Obviously, Friday had bad luck. Saturday, I surprisingly had bad luck getting into some panels because I didn't go early enough. So I didn't have no trouble for any of the panels on Sunday. But it did pick up later, so it was packed pretty much all weekend. So yeah, I think it's pretty clear anime is pretty mainstream.
Yeah, this is like a 50,000 person con or so.
I know they expanded. They did obviously have more space this year, obviously for COVID reasons, and then also for, I think, just how much they sold out of everything. So
yeah, I saw some pictures of those panel rooms, and those were like cheek to jowl. Not what I want to be doing in a pandemic. I mean, that's basically what my commute is like these days on the DC Metro with its only 40% of capacity running, but you know.
Got the standing room only. Hey, so they all sit down. Well, we got to get people in this panel.
Well, at least it's not like Otakon where they suddenly inform you, hey, apparently it is DC fire code regulations that you can't have anybody standing in the back of panel rooms anymore. Woo. That was very strange.
But yeah, I could go a little on about the anime experience, but I am going to write about it, so it is what it is. And we got some licenses from anime that we got to go to. So Helen, let me take a little break. You go say some of them.
All right. So starting off with Yen Press. Basically, everybody who came to Anime New York City this year came just bearing absolute boatloads of licenses. They are bringing over Magia Record, Puella Magi Madoka Magica, Another Story by, I think this is by U35?
This should be the Magica Quartet. I don't know if this is U35, though.
Yeah, I was looking on the ANN page, and I was not entirely sure.
What did they write?
I think they said U35, but it was not worded as well as some of their other articles have been.
You mean I gotta bring out you might be right though. Yeah, it is U35. It's okay. Magic Quartet and U35.
Yeah. Okay, they are also bringing over Chito Sekun is in the Ramune Bottle manga. Bobcat's manga is an adaptation of Hiromu and Ramsey's light novel of the same name. The Bride of Demise novel by Keishi Ayasato with illustrations by Karuki Mura. Sasaki and Pichan novels by Bunkoli with illustrations by Kantoku.
Bunkololi.
I can't tell if that's an illness or a new form of a broccoli dish.
Bukololi. Come on, Helen.
Hi, I'm a witch and my crush wants me to make a love potion manga, which is Kamada's adaptation of Eiko Mutsuhana and Vien's light novel series. Folks will probably recognize the name because Cross Infinite Worlds has had the light novels for a while now.
And that's my one of the titles I made like two typos on.
Justin, did you want to take a break from talking or not?
Fair enough.
The Other World's books depend on the Bean Counter manga.
Light novel.
No, it says manga. Kazuki Idori's manga is based on Wakatsu Yatsuki and Kika Ohashi's light novel series of the same name.
I could have sworn I put that for the Yenon part, because they were talking about light novels.
Well, this is a section that I put together this morning, I remember. Because that's why everything is formatted differently than the way you usually format these. See You Tomorrow at the Food Court manga, which is
do confirm. Bean Counter is a manga. Okay.
I'm giving you faces that you can't see right now, but... See You Tomorrow at the Food Court, which is a one-volume manga by Shinichiro Nari. Knights of a Cat, which... I could not figure out who the creator of that was, but I've seen the pictures on Twitter. It's the one with the really fat gray tabby, and it looks adorable.
Furuyu-Z. What is that? What it was called?
I wasn't sure. I was even looking at the manga cover, and I still wasn't sure who the creator was on there, so...
I'm pretty sure it was Fuyuzi.
But anyway, if you guys have been on Twitter and you enjoy cat pictures, you've almost certainly seen some of these comics before. I'm looking forward to it. The Geek X Hitman manga by Kodai and Yen Press also announced they're going to start digitally simulpubbing chapters of the No Game, No Life light novels, beginning with the prologue chapter of the novel's 11th volume. That's going to debut on November 25th, so probably by the time this podcast goes up, alongside the volume's Japanese release. And then they also, like you said, they had a specific Yen On panel, right? Just for light novels?
They did. I can actually tell you off the top of my head because I actually went through it today. Okay. And yeah, I can tell you today. So they are going to be releasing audiobooks of Isuna Hasekura's Spice and Wolf, Okina Baba's So My Spider So What, and Hajime Kamoshida's Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai.
Wait, that's Yen Audio. I said Yen On, the light novels.
Don't you say audio? I heard the audio. Ugh, maybe I'm tired. How about that?
I mean, you were definitely tired.
wait, you said the light novels?
Yeah, I thought you had said they did a Yen On panel. Are you saying they did a Yen Audio panel?
They did an audio, yeah. Okay. Yeah, audio. And I'm, yeah, wait. Are they not here? Just realized that. I didn't even catch that.
Like I was telling you before the podcast, if it happened after... like no, 12:30 today, it did not make it on.
No, you said it. The Bride of Demise and Sasaki and Picha. Those are light novels.
Oh, okay. So they did one panel for their manga and light novel sides and another for their audiobook side. Just do one panel for everything. You don't need imprints for everything. What is the point of this?
separate stuff. And hey, imprints are nice. What are you talking about?
The only thing we do with them is we put them in the tags of the reviews. That's the only thing we do with them.
You made notes about what are novels and what are manga. What is this, Helen?
Madness.
Anyways, but yes, those were audio announcements, the Yen audio announcements today. So My Spider, Spice and Wolf, and Bunny Girl Senpai.
And then J Novel Club also had a ton of announcements. All of these are light novels, no manga this time. When Supernatural Battles Become Commonplace, which is by Koto Nozumi with illustrations by Oniku, which is spelled both O-N-I-K-U and also 029, because haha, it's a pun. They formerly did the illustrations on Devil as a Part-Timer, which is why those designs look so similar. And the title of the series might also be familiar since Trigger did an adaptation of it back in like 2014 or so. Anyway, so they're going to be bringing out the light novels for that. And also Housekeeping Maid from Another World, Making Your Adventures Feel Like Home, written by Yu, spelled Y-O-U for once, Fuguruma, with illustrations by Nama. Prison Life is Easy for a Villainess, which is a two-volume complete series by Hibiki Yamazaki, with illustrations by Tetsuro Nabishima, though it sounds like Yamazaki is still writing some side stories. Fantasy Inbound, which is written by Joe Takizuki, who some fans might know previously wrote a series called Champone. Not licensed, but an anime adaptation of it did come out over here. And this one has illustrations by Shirabi. To Another World with Landmines, which is another one of those So My Entire Class Got Isekai'd stories, by Mizuo Itsuki with illustrations by Neko Nekobyo. I'm going to be putting so many of these on my thread of weird pseudonyms tonight, I can tell.
You should do a panel at this point.
They're also bringing over Forgetting the Villainous, I Want to Be an Adventurer, which is written by Hiro Oda and illustrated by Toby. My Stepmom's Daughter is My Ex by Kyosuke Kamishiro with illustrations by Takayaki, who also illustrates Arufueta from Commonplace to World's Strongest. They're bringing over Magic Knight of the Old Ways by Taro Hitsuji with illustrations by Asagi Tosaka. Saint? No, I'm just a passing beast tamer. Inumajin with illustrations by Falling Moro. Did they just call themselves Dog Beast for their name?
Hey, you should remember who that is.
My Quiet Blacksmith Life in Another World, written by Tamamura, with illustrations by Kinta. And interestingly enough, the J-Novel Club announcements noted that a lot of these are being published first on the Shosetsuka Ninaru website, the Let's Become Novelist website. So it's definitely really interesting to see still just how many of these titles are being published there first before being approached by publishers in Japan and picked up. Very different from the American system of how books get published with querying and things.
Right.
And I cannot match the presentation of this that there was in the panel, but they are also jumping into audiobooks, with their first one being the audiobook version of the Slayers novels, and it's going to be narrated by Lena's dub actress, Lisa Oritzi?
Ortiz.
I never saw Slayers back in the day, that's why I don't
know. But how does Ortiz... What? Helen, please.
Listen, these people are American, but that just means your last name can be from any fucking language on Earth. It means that, like, this is what a vowel sounds like in English, but this word might actually be French, and the vowel sounds totally different there.
But anyways, Helen was going about how the presentation was. Yes, it was a very... If you're, A, have watched Slayers, B, have read Slayers, you will kind of get that, oh, wait, Lena showing up out of nowhere just to ruin Sam's plan. Sam was just literally just saying, like, they were just exploring the option of doing audiobooks. No plans, no nothing. Then you get Lena's voice actress just coming out of nowhere just say, yeah, we're going to negotiate, do a launch of audiobooks, right? Right? Yes, yes. Probably was winking in the background, too. It was really funny. I kind of wish somebody had, like, put a video up on it. It was hilarious. Hilarious.
It is rather impressive now that the Slayers books have done so well that they are putting them out in hardback. They had like a bonus if you bought it this weekend at Anime New York City that did give you a dust cover jacket for it. And they're putting out audiobook versions of it. So rejoice, Slayers fans. I know a couple of very big Slayers fans on Twitter who are all like, yes, I am now buying the series for the sixth time. I love it.
It's like sixth time. Like, what? You got the Tokyopop version? Yes.
I know someone versions. Where she was like, both me and my husband had copies of the Tokyopop version, so we've got two copies of those. We've got the new e-books, the new physical books, and we will be getting the audiobooks.
Yeah, at the rate we're going, they're going to also get the side stories as well. At the very rate. Going to have at some point, they're going to have the Orphan Slayers spinoff at some point. It's going to happen at the rate they're going. But yeah, I got a couple of J-Novel Heart announcements. Got a few illustrators, recognizable illustrators. So, and as usual, more isekai. That's generally their MO nowadays.
Although I feel like we're starting to get even more, which aren't even isekai. They're just straight up fantasy stories with people bucking their fate. Like, I think the Passing Beast Tamer isn't isekai. It's just someone who's like, but I don't want to be the saint. I just want fluffy animals. Which is very relatable, I think.
Right. I just hope this one is better than the Woof Woof Fenrir light novel. Just hoping.
Yeah, that one was definitely kind of bland.
It's not too good. And we got, yes, more licenses. And this was the one that, for some inexplicable reason, Hell did not put the Kodansha announcements that happened today in the script.
But listen, don't worry. I spent an hour this morning formatting the rest of the script with everything else.
I got your backup. I'm the backup here. I actually went there, and it was actually kind of crazy, first of all. There was a packed room, and they were going kind of fast. I was like, oh, nice.
Yeah, it kind of seemed today. Like that since you were tweeting them, their social media was tweeting them at close to the same time, and like, one or two other people I followed on Twitter were also tweeting them all at the same time, so my Twitter feed was just filling up, and I was like, nope, can't follow this. Too fast.
It's like, at one point, I was just like, can I just, like, stop? Just stop, and when is it gonna end? Like, it was funny. They got to the box set section, and I was like, okay, that's kind of over, right? But then I'm like, wait, Toma hasn't said anything yet. He hasn't talked yet, great. And then, of course, they announced more titles, like, ugh. You people. But okay, everything... Okay, first I'm going to start with the digital stuff. Okay, just to once again say this. Two of these leaked already on, like, Bookwalker and other digital platforms. So I already knew they were going to do this. So
yeah, and are any of these box sets the ones that you could find on Amazon already, two months ago?
No. I'm separating that. The fall stuff they announced was legit. But as usual, they have their digital stuff out way earlier than before they announce it. I'm just going to assume they don't care. That's all I'm just saying.
Yeah, J Novel Club is way better about keeping their stuff under wraps until they actually announce it.
Oh, and that And before I get to Kenshin, I'm going to tell you a good story. They sent the press releases for the 10 new titles in advance, so I knew that was happening.
For J-Novel Club, I take
J-Novel, it? J-Novel, yeah, J-Novel Club. So I was already like, I was going to be like, should I just text Helen to not get her hopes up about Apothecary Diaries in print? Should I just text? Should I just line her right now? But I had to just hold it in until you saw it. So, okay, that's fine.
I was a little sad, but they didn't have print announcements for anything this time around. So, oh well.
They did not.
My prayer circle is still going strong.
Yeah, they may wait till like it gets more volumes before they announce it. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. They did not send a press release for Slayers.
I figured. It seemed like you were also caught off guard on Twitter.
They did not. So I had no preparation for that. And yeah, so as you can see, they're very, J-Novel is very conscious about what goes out on digital platforms. Very conscious. So, all right, let's get into what Kenshin announced for their digital debuts in December. So TNSK, My Master Has No Tail, Hiroki Take, Jet Kusamura, and Kyo Nuisawa's Shaman King and a Garden, because we know, like, your Yenpress has all those Bungo Stray Dogs spinoffs and everything. Kodansha is going to have literally every single Shaman King spinoff for their service, or for their, to publish for Shaman King fans. Every, seriously, all of them. Yuki Narumi is My Darling, the company president, and Helen's favorite author, or one of Helen's favorite author titles, 66 Special Information Battalion, Akira Minamoto, Kona Warita, and Eri Iramoto's Her Majesty's Swarm. So they're going to bring that digitally. Obviously, J-Novel Club is releasing the light novels in digital and print format now.
Yeah, that's how I recognized. I was like, wait a minute, I've seen this name before. I'm pretty sure the light novels have already come out over here.
Yeah. I wonder if J-Novel Club kind of wanted to get this, but, well, kind of just like, it's in our magazine. Too bad. Just gave it to the country US themselves. So yeah, those are digital announcements. Those will all be coming out in consecutive Tuesdays. Starting with the first one, My Master Has No Tail, so 7, 14, 21, 28.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that's like Tanuki's Rakugo and Slate like Yuri. It's getting an anime soon.
It is? Okay, that's interesting. Good timing for them, I think.
Is this the one that's Tanuki's and Rakugo?
Yeah,
it's getting an anime.
Yeah, okay, that's timing, Kodansha, timing. But now, okay, moving on to what they announced for their fall 22 release slate. So this will be both in print and digital. Fujino Omori and Toshi Aoi's Wistoria, Wand and Sword. If the Omori name sounds familiar, think of that Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon light novel series. Yeah, that guy. I know this is going to be kind of divisive, but Neji Horiba's title that got announced today, the Super Sentai one, I love the title. Go, go, Loser Ranger. Go, go, Loser Ranger. It just rolls off the tongue.
It does.
It just rolls. Like, Mighty Morphin Loser Rangers. So, yes, it's obviously hitting the nostalgia part. I don't know about the younger generation, unfortunately. I don't know about them, if they'll like it.
I believe a lot of Power Rangers is on Netflix, so there might be another generation getting into it right now.
I was surprised they were going to bring out more Neji Herbert, another Neji Herbert work. Obviously, Quintessential Quintuplets is a popular series for them, so it's not surprising they're going to bring out the new one. Curious is still going to sign with Puppet. I am still curious about that. They haven't announced it, obviously, but I am keeping an eye on that, but we'll see. They announced they licensed Baton's Runaway with Me Girl. They announced Yuki Kamatani's Shonen Note Boy Soprano. If the Yuki Kamatani name sounds familiar, just think of what they published with the Seven Seas, Shimigane Tassogare. Dreams of Dusk. Jine, Mirai, and Natsumi Inoue's As a Reincarnated Aristocrat, I'll Use My Appraisal Skill to Rise in the World. So yes, it says, as you can tell, isekai. But we're not done with isekai just yet, Helen. We're not done. We got Nana Mikoshiba, Norito Sasaki, and Riko Okori is the Ice Blade Sorcerer. I guess I was wrong about the isekai part, but there was an isekai title later. The Ice Blade Sorcerer shall rule the world. This is actually a digital first title. Now it's going to be in print. Funny enough, the digital titles came out this month. So that's interesting for them. And as expected, Mika Yamamori's In the Clear Moonlit Dusk is now going to be from digital print. This was almost kind of obvious when you say, wait, we got the daytime Shooting Star creator's work already out, available in print and everything. We should probably think about doing the other one that she's working on right now, also in print. So this is not a surprising announcement at all. Kenkyo, Now, Circle, Yosuke, Kokuzawa, and Meru's I Was Reincarnated as the Seven Prince, so I can take my time, perfect my magical ability. This is one of two titles where they did say by popular demand was the reason why it was made in print. And I have seen some reviews, a lot of reviews on Amazon. And it kind of came out, I think, earlier this year, or was it sometime in the summer, somewhere around there. So I guess it is technically worth a print release. This is another one that I'm not surprised it's getting a print release because they've been kind of pushing this a little bit. Katsurina and Ryosuke Fuji's Shangri-La Frontier. So that's also now, this has been published digitally. Now it's also in print. And then the other, supposedly, the other popular title was Masaki Nakayama's PTSD Radio. This will be released in two on Omnibus Editions. So I heard that was pretty popular, and they're going to be bringing that out in print. I'm going to have kind of jump around a little bit because I want to keep going with these manga licenses. They also are going to be releasing Taka Aki's Miss Miyazen Would Love to Get Closer to You. They announced another... We talk about Shujiro Oshimi all the time, it feels like, because they just keep... Publishers just keep bringing out all of his stuff. And we got another one, Avant-Garde Yumeko. And I love this. The description seems amazing, Helen. I just want to see it. High schooler Yumeko is your ordinary high school girl, except she's obsessed with seeing the nail body part in real life. Determined, Yumeko decides to join the art club at school. Well, okay, Yumeko. Good luck.
I mean, that's one way to do it.
let's see. Kanasha has also announced they licensed Tomoko Bryoku's An Older Guy's VR First Love. And they're going to be releasing... Excuse me. they're going to be releasing Tsusomu Nihei's Noise in print. I think this was formerly digitally only, and obviously it was only in print from Tokyopop. Wait, was it Tokyopop or Doei?
I think I saw people online saying Tokyopop.
Okay. Okay, Tokyopop. Yeah, it's only print release of Tokyopop. Obviously, that doesn't exist anymore, but now it's back in print. So, you can look forward to that. They're going to be releasing a paperback edition of Nisuisen's Katana Gatari. So, if you didn't want the hardcover version or missed out on the hardcover version, you can now get it cheaper and it's a paperback. And it's funny. We talk about... We talked about Usamaru Furuya not being, like, prominent in the past couple years. And now all of a sudden we got the Music of Marie coming out next year from One Piece Books. And now Kodansha's going to release that complete edition of No Longer Human, which is obviously Usamaru Furuya's take on Osamu Dazai's novel. Yeah, that's coming back in fall 2022. What was funny, I was seeing like some of the tweets about that, about how it's great that the regular is back because it's, like, expensive. On like collectors, all those who are selling it for like expensive prices are just like, oh no, this is bad. This is very bad. they're also going to release a collector's edition of Junji Ito's Dissolving Classroom. So yes, that's not surprising either. More Junji Ito. That Junji Ito is just a brand at this point. Everything that gets pushed out here sells like hotcakes. So it is what it is. Now we're on to, yes, we're not done yet. Now we're on to more Kodansha stuff, but this is more like box sets and different formats. So starting with one of the more, I guess, divisive or kind of controversial or ordinary romance bullying comedies. I don't know. Nanashi's Don't Toy Me This Nagatoro. This is going to be a box set in fall 2022. We are not done with box sets. We have so many more. We have Reiji Miyajima's Rent a Girlfriend, Fujita's Wotokoi, and Kitsetsu Yamada's Sweat and Soap. Ooh. Those are all going to be in box set format. I am looking forward to it coming out in like winter or in 2023 based on how things have been going lately. Who knows how things will change by then, but we'll see. And they're going to release omnibus editions of Eddie Choka's Noragami, Atsushi Okubo's Fire Force, and Atsuko Asano and Hinoki Kino's Number 6. And they're going to also release a fully compiled hardcover edition, Masamune Shiro's The Ghost in the Shell. So the basic understanding is, it's literally going to be everything in one big brick. I think even Ben Applegate, I think he even said it was a brick. So yes, books are going to have a brick in your house. Perfect. Absolutely fantastic. And I think that's it for Kodansha stuff. I think. They may be announcing stuff like five hours ago. I'd have no idea.
Denpa also had a panel, although it was considerably smaller than the big publishers here. They're still associated with Faku. I don't remember the exact nature of it, but they had an announcement that Faku is going to be putting out Ryutu Amazume's Nana and Kaoru manga, which are going to be 3-in-1 omnibuses. And since it's going to Faku, you know it is spicy.
And well,
I also looked at this manga, Justin. It is, in fact, spicy.
Okay, fair enough.
And Denpa has also licensed June's Tabe Girl art book. So, low-key there, but Ed was apparently talking about some other things, like having a hard time finding someone to do the shogi essays, and March comes in like a lion, which, fair. And that also, apparently, there aren't digital versions of those files, so... Oh no!
Yeah, it's like an older title, isn't it?
March Comes in Like a Lion is still currently ongoing, so
no, it's ongoing, but isn't it kind of a longer series though? And didn't it start like?
I guess, but I am kind of curious what they mean by no digital files, since obviously at some point the manuscript pages had to get scanned to get printed, you know, in the magazine and in Japan. So I'm wondering if they don't even have those files anymore, if they need to rescan stuff.
Well, look at this, Helen.
But that is like, a real in-the-weeds question.
It took eons for there to be a digital version of boxing, Hajime no Ippo.
So that was a rights thing. That was with the creator not wanting to do digital. That wasn't a physical media issue. Yeah, since... Listen, at work, I am scanning, like... stuff that's a couple hundred years old, like every single day, it can be done. And so Kamiki, which is I think I complained recently that we had yet another online only manga, not aggregator, publisher, I guess you could say, yet another online manga service. They had a panel and they announced some new titles there as well. 13 more. So these are all manga, no light novels. I think I'll be cheat to become a spell sword in another world by Shin Kotsoto, Tomozo Nanoru, and Itsuki Watanabe.
If that Shin Kotsoto sounds familiar, think about the Strongest Sage with Weakest Quest and that Isekai Life manga series.
That one did not sound familiar, but I have not read Strongest Sage with the Weakest Quest, so.
The point is, it feels like, actually, I want to make sure, the name sounds totally familiar, but I'm pretty sure it is the same guy. Yeah, it is the same guy. So basically, literally, the author's work is all isekai stuff. They're all coming over here. Incredible.
And then we have The Executed Sage, who was reincarnated as a like and started an all-out war by Karaka Yuki, Pyron, and Shotaro Kunimoto. I feel like necromancy and stuff like that is having a bit of a resurgence, because one of their other titles was The Necromancer Maid by Miju Rushui, Shimazaki, and Hama. They're also bringing over From Overshadowed to Overpowered, Second Reincarnation of a Talentless Sage by Arta Shiraishi and Kentaro. The Greatest Demon Lord is Reborn as a Typical Nobody by Myoji Kato, Sao Mizuno, and Misoho Kobota? God. I'm mispronouncing everything tonight. they're also bringing over bottom tier character Tomozaki by Yuki Yaku, Fly, and 8 Cheetah? All right, you can't even blame me for tripping over some of these names. Some of these are just weird. They're bringing over Rust Eater Bisco, Saibiku Bisco by Shinji Kobkubo and Yusuke Takahashi.
If these three titles sound familiar, yes, Yen Press is publishing the light novels of all those.
Yeah, and I think Rust Eater Bisco is getting an anime soon.
Yes, this winter.
Yeah, and Tomozaki got an anime recently, so.
Yes, and the
Greatest Demon Lord is. That explains their sudden popularity.
And the greatest demon lord is getting an anime, so.
The Impregnable Demon's Castle and the Expelled Black Mage at the Hero's Party by Hozumi Mitaka, Yuhi, J1 Kaido, Ao Yumitori, Roku Hirashi.
Hold up. Is there five people credited for this?
Yes.
Wait, what?
For stuff like this, I'm assuming it is an adaptation of a light novel, because then sometimes you get, like, the author, the character designer, the illustrator, the manga drawer. I know on Apothecary Diaries there's someone credited with, like, compilation, and it's like, I don't know what that role is, but it's on the cover, so.
How is there five people on that one series?
Goodbye.
There is really five people on that one series. Incredible.
Goodbye Eden by Zero Ainon. Asahina Wakabe and her chubby chubby boyfriend by Takahashi Hazuma and Hige. Is somebody's pen name just mustache? The unrivaled reincarnated sage of another world, Tilde, the strongest in another world through game knowledges, Tilde, by Shin Koshoto, Kaito Saibano, Miso Sato.
Hey, look, it's that Shin Koshoto person again.
If they pop up any more times, I'm going to start pronouncing their name right on the first go. I became a legend after my 10-year-long last stand. Whoever was opposing you should have given up by that point. By Eizo Gintsune, Decha, Chacho Abino, and Kitsune Tenjo. I know just enough Japanese to start getting some of the jokes behind these pen names, and they are silly. The strongest wizard became a countryside guard after taking an arrow to the knee. I do not know how these sounds go together. Eizo Gintsune, Teddy, all caps, and Masaki Ayano. And then, finally, and not a title announcement, but just sort of an other thing, they've also announced that they're partnering with Soran Books to publish the following Korean webtoon, Americano Exodus by Park Jae-un, and they're open to licensing more than just Japanese manga, so we may see more webtoons from them in the future.
Well, from my understanding, they are a general comic service. It's just obviously manga, at the moment, it's a little bit more popular.
Yeah, they made a comment about they are open to, like, publishing some of these things in print, and it's like, please God, I will sacrifice somebody else's firstborn child for a print version of Arte.
Good luck.
I'm not going to have any children, so I can't really offer up my own firstborn, so got to get my siblings on it.
Anyway, speaking of other types of books from other countries, we got Wattpad Webtoon Studios. They announced on Thursday they have launched a new imprint called Webtoon Unscrolled. So they're going to be publishing graphic novels from Webtoon Comics, and it's going to begin with I feel like people have just talked this up for so long. Tower of God, that's going to be imprint. I think that's going to be nice for people who finally get. They've been wanting that for a while, so it's nice to see that's getting imprint.
I don't know. I've seen the art for that one. It is not good art.
Hey, people can enjoy that. Hey, whatever the art is, doesn't matter. The story is really good, apparently. I don't know. So well, I like say. The anime. Well, despite some of his issues, I did like the anime. So, I probably might be interested in checking out the print versions. I'm not sure yet.
All right, review from Justin incoming.
Check out the digital version instead, but we'll see about that. They also announced some other stuff. Yonggi's True Beauty, Blue Thief's Doombreaker, Lamcat's Curse, Princess Club, Reframbo's Boyfriends, and Mike Burchell's Everything is Fine. So these are all the initial Webtoon Unscrolled lineup.
Yeah, I've definitely seen the Curse Princess Club on, like, the website Webtoon before. So, yeah, I guess that one's popular, although I also thought the art on that one didn't look too great, so.
Look, whatever your standards are, they're just not the public standards, Helen. Just not.
Justin, have you seen how much shit I read? My standards are clearly not that high in some cases. True fear is sharing your accounts with somebody else so they can see what the heck did Helen binge last night at 11 p.m. I'm not telling you on what service it was, Justin. You can go find it out yourself.
Anyways, Seven Seas had an interesting couple weeks for Wednesday announcements. They did the usual thing where they announced a couple titles on Wednesday. So the two Wednesdays ago, they announced they licensed Keisuke Makino and Kare's Irina the Vampire Cosmonaut. This is obviously the light novel to the Airship imprint.
And that was the original author had said recently that it was going to be licensed by somebody, so we were just sort of waiting for whoever it was to formally announce it.
It was either going to be Yenpress or Seven Seas, and this time it was Seven Seas. Good on them. Sui Hutami's Dungeon People, and Horitomo's I Am Not a Succubus. I think this is a Yuri Ghost Ship title. I believe that's what I saw.
I think I read the summary for that one, and it was funny sounding. I probably won't actually read it, but the summary sounded funny.
But then this past Wednesday, surprisingly enough, they only announced one title. It's like, what? Well, at least for them, it's one of the bigger titles. Sundae's Go For It Again Nakamura. This is the sequel to the Go For It Nakamura. So
I did not know there was a sequel for this. As I think by everybody.
Yeah, this, I feel like I saw this was... happened. This was a sequel, like either earlier this year or something like that. This was, I know I saw something about a sequel, so yeah, good for those who were looking forward to reading more Nakamura's stories. There you go.
And then Manga Planet announced that it is now licensed over 150 Kodansha titles for their service. No, you fools, we are not going to be reading out 150 Kodansha titles here.
Just know they got some of the big ones. There you go.
Yeah. Technically, they announced this at AX Lite a few months ago, but they announced it again. And from there, I think we can finally move on to anime licensing announcements, of which there are a lot fewer. we have Discotech saying they're going to be putting out Ninja Senshi Tobikabe, a.k.a. Ninja Robots, Urusei Yatsura, Remember My Love, Case Closed, Sunflowers of Inferno, Detective Conan, Sunflowers of Inferno. Yes, Justin, we know it's called Detective Conan in Japan. Appleseed, and Kenichi, The Mightiest Disciple, Season 2. Some of these were already streaming or available digitally, but this is just sort of the formal announcement that they'll be in print. And Sentai is licensed Hare Yule 2 Boy? I have never heard of this before, but apparently they licensed it.
I have never heard of it either. And I was like, what? But okay, it's on the script anyway. I mean, it's going in the script anyways. There you go. Since I have to do stuff like this, there you go.
And now, moving on to our streaming news. Continuing along with Sentai-adjacent things, High Dive is going to be streaming the Magnificent Kotobuki compilation film on November 25th. I keep forgetting that this CGI monstrosity exists. And also the School Live live-action adaptation.
And now we transition over to Netflix, who had their Netflix Festival Japan this past Monday, and they had some announcements. I don't think they were as good as last year's, or what was it?
I don't know. I got like one person to start watching Tiger and Bunny that night, so. bullied Dawn of the Anime Nostalgia Podcast into watching Tiger and Bunny.
But yes, Tiger and Bunny 2 was announced. Well, we already knew it was announced. It's just that when was it happening? Who's streaming it? Netflix is streaming it. So this is coming April 2022. This is going to be the first 13 episodes. So it's not going to be streaming once a week, if you were looking forward to that. Same with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 6, Stone Ocean. This will be airing December 1st. The first 12 episodes will be airing, or will be streaming on the service. Very curious about the overall schedule for this one. How many episodes this will all have in general. The JoJo series tend to have some good amount of episodes, so this is a good initial start. The Therme Rome Novae anime. This was announced back at the 2020 festival, but they had to push this back to 2022, so it's going to air at some point next year. going to have the season 2 of Ghost in the Shell, SAC_2045, that's coming 2022. The Wit Studio led Vampire in the Garden. This was previously mentioned back in 2019 and was supposed to come out at this point, or it was supposed to come out already, but this has been pushed to 2022. Kotaro Lives Alone, Netflix, I think, already announced this a few months ago, but now they're officially dating it for spring 2022. I think now we're getting into some really new stuff, like stuff we haven't really heard of or haven't been announced. We have two, not one, but two Detective Conan spin-offs that Netflix surprisingly has. Zero's Tea Time and the Culprit Hanzawa. They're going to be streaming the Mitsu Ito's The Orbital Children. I think this is like a web... this is going to be a web series, so it's like a couple episodes.
That's the streaming. I thought it was going to be a movie.
I saw somewhere it was like six episodes. It had a six episode listing. I mean, technically, it's going to be averaging like a film length. So you could kind of consider it a film. But I saw somewhere it was like a six episode length. So somewhere in that range. But that's going to be on the service in January 28th. We're going to. Somebody out there is going to be explaining what happened to the Seven Deadly Sins franchise, because that was obviously one of the more popular series around, but now all of a sudden something's happened with the anime, and now we're getting another film, the Seven Deadly Sins Grudge of Edinburgh film. It's going to be two parts in air in 2022, and it doesn't look very good.
Oh no.
It does not. It's definitely a strange situation for that franchise. It's very weird.
Have they adapted the whole manga by this point, or
what? Are they working on spinoffs? I think this is like a spinoff of the series. And then I think I saw somewhere the latest Seven Deadly Sins getting anime adaptation. I think I saw that somewhere. But we'll see. We'll have to see if it looks better than this, and who's doing it. But yeah, what a interesting or strange fall for that series. And then got more Kakaguri, but this time they're going to be adapting the spinoff, Kakaguri Twin. This is for August 2022. And then they're also going to be doing a space horror anime called Exception. That will also be streaming on sometime in 2022. So yeah, that was their fall announcements. They did have other announcements, but pretty sure we're going to talk about those a little bit later.
Well, they also they didn't formally announce this, but after getting all of the Saint Seiya anime in 2019, they are now going to be taking it all off the service on December 14th. So, fare thee well, Saint Seiya. I never had a chance to watch you, but I am sad about this. Listen, the world has been a very busy place since 2019.
Yes, it has. It has. But, well, since we're on the subject of Netflix, and we are now moving on to the, I won't say this is the longest weird news section we have, but we got some weird news to talk about. On that note of Netflix, they did have a live action section, and we got potentially big mecha action in Gundam, which I think they have this. Well, they actually revealed concept art. I don't know if they have a formal release date for this yet. But then we also got the Spirit Gun. Somebody's going to be doing a Spirit Gun in live-action form, Netflix form. So yes, Yu Yu Hakusho is going to be a Netflix live-action series in slated for December 2023. That's definitely a long ways away, but it is what it is. It's just the nature of things nowadays. Things can't be that fast. So yes, I
feel like we had heard a little bit about both of these before, but this is like more firm dates.
Here's something funny. I went to a panel. Evan Minto did a panel about Hollywood and anime. It was talking about just so many films were just in development hell or just like long and like discussions, because it's just so much things you have to get cleared, verified, all that stuff for years and years. So it's totally possible. We've heard Yu Yu Hakusho in development and Gundam in development. Although funny enough, he did also at the panel, the anime Hollywood Power, he did like show there was a live action version of G-Savior, or was it G-Savior, I think what it was called. There was a live action version that
I know there's Gundam. A live action Gundam before. It's like F91, and we just simply do not talk about it, apparently.
Yeah, he was talking about that they had the one Gundam fight in that whole film. It's like, what? How do you only have one Gundam fight, and it looks as awful as it does? Incredible, guys, incredible. But yeah, normally, again, this would have been another section, but I cannot, until we actually get a good Netflix live action work, this will always be in the weird news section. Sorry, I'm looking at you, Cowboy Bebop. I'm looking at you.
Yeah, I have not watched it yet. I don't think I want to at this point, but it seems like every single clip I've seen of it does not look good.
I feel like if we're going to watch the live action, I should probably watch the original first.
Wait, you've never seen Cowboy Bebop?
I have seen sporadic episodes on Toonami or Adult Swim, one or the other. Probably Adult Swim. But I've never actually sat down and watched every episode.
Ah, you should. It's fun. It's a good series. The live action. The anime, that is.
I knew what you were talking about, Haley. I knew.
Yeah, I think my favorite Cowboy Bebop memory is that a couple years ago, my mom had somebody over at her house to do work. I think the TV was on the fritz again. And I don't know how, but the topic of anime came up, and she mentioned that she had a daughter who watches anime. And apparently the repair guy said something to the effect of, oh, has she seen Cowboy Bebop? Wait, if she's an anime fan, she's seen Cowboy Bebop. And that was one of the few times in my life where I felt like someone has assumed something correctly about me. But yes, it is now time for weird news, and this happened like literally an hour after we recorded the last episode. Where American politician Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona, somebody on his staff, probably multiple somebodies on staff, thought this was a good idea, and they took the original Attack on Titan opening and turned it into an anti-immigration video by, like, pasting people's heads onto characters. And so, like, the Aaron Jaeger character was trying to kill, like, Biden and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And it was showing, like, overhead video of some of the detention camps on the U.S. side for migrants. And it was just like, what is going on?
You said
to the point where this had to be discussed
yes.
in Congress. And yes. so they voted to censor him, which isn't something that actually happens that often. And he's been removed from his committee assignments. And so, I was just thinking that I'm so glad that my mother, the political science professor, is the one of the two of us who has actually seen some Attack on Titan. I haven't, but she actually has. Like, my stepsister showed her an episode. So I'm so glad I probably do not need to explain this to her, you know? And while this was happening, on the Japanese side, the folks who were making the merch decided, okay, actually, we're not going to be making and selling armbands that look like those worn by the Edelin characters in the show, aka the ones where everyone looked at this and went, is this a Nazi slash Holocaust slash like anti-Semitist analogy? You've got an oppressed class walking around with armbands being accused of being inhuman by the ruling class? It was like,
Not what you want to do.
Again, multiple people probably thought this was a good idea. But who thought this was a good idea? The visuals is so bad on an obvious level. Just like, just don't go there.
It's like, where what happened here? Just, what are we doing here? We really let this get out there, didn't we? We let this get out there. Obviously, they were shamed, and I always had to stop. just not very good. Not very good planning at all.
I mean, I have seen real legitimate debate online over whether or not Attack on Titan is like a fascist work or an anti-fascist work. I have seen debate on all of this, but I feel like manufacturing and selling armbands worn by a minority group in your series is just something where people should automatically be going, nope.
Yeah.
Not going there.
Yeah. The franchise, if the Attack on Titan wasn't exploited, fine, but the selling part and looking like that, it's not good. Not good.
We live in a world where some of us actually remember our history classes.
That is true. And I do want to kind of quickly go back to the Gosar thing. Just the fact that we even had this happening is, we talk about anime being mainstream, this is the downsides of anime being very mainstream. Right here.
I remember I sent you a link and you were like, nope, I'm not even clicking on that. I'm just looking at the headline.
I can already tell it's going to be dope. And then, of course, it gets reported. I saw the screenshot, one of the screenshots. Yeah, I was totally right. Totally right.
To be fair, that comment from you was last Sunday when I sent you the link, that this was before he got censored and this turned into a national thing. And it was just like, okay.
So, all right, let's
we live in an interesting timeline, Justin.
We really do. Let's move on to some better, weirder news. In essence, this technically isn't weird news. PA Works, who will be adapting the manga of Ya Boy Koming. So that's getting a TV anime. It's slated for spring 2022. Normally, that's not weird news, but I put it in here because there's an interesting fact that I had to put in here. PA Works' first anime was True Tears in 2008. They had never worked on a manga adaptation in that entire span.
Or a light novel, I think. I think this is their first adaptation.
No, they've done. They've done novels. They obviously they did. What was it Eccentric Family, right?
Oh right, yeah. I forgot since that one's more.
I feel like they've done. I think they did.
You're right.
I think was it Red Data Girl was another one. I think they've done a couple. There was a couple. So they've done light novels, they've done their own original series, but they've never done a manga in this entire span since they started doing anime in 2008. And I found that really fascinating. What changed?
Somebody was just so taken by Ya Boy Koming, I guess. I do love the title for that one. I have not read this manga Kodansha's putting it out, but I do just find the title entirely hilarious. let's see. I'm still watching Talked Op. I am told that the way you pronounce OP in music is actually Opus. I'm still watching Talk Opus Destiny, and I knew it was a mixed media project, but I didn't realize the smartphone game hadn't come out yet. And apparently it's going to be delayed into next year, so the anime adaptation is going to be completely done before this is released. Not on the English side, like on the Japanese side, so whatever mixed media synergy they were going for has just fallen flat on its face.
Yeah. It's definitely, it can still be successful, but I think that there's supposed to be a timing factor here, but if you're delaying the smartphone game, there's an issue here with the timing. Very much an issue. I'll catch up to that anime one day, though. I'll catch up one day.
I mean, if you've got free time, sure, but it's not super worth it.
All right, I'm going to get on the Mugen Airplane at some point. I'm just going to do it. So yes, if you thought we were done with Demon Slayer, we were definitely not done with Demon Slayer.
I mean, the new stuff hasn't even started airing yet.
We still have no new stuff for that yet, so it's going to be weirder news regarding that at some point, I am sure. But let's start with the more positive one. We got the jetliner that's going to use the Demon Slayer designs. It's kind of weird for something that kind of started recently to have this happen to them. Like, you had Gundam, was one on liner. You had the Evangelion series that's gotten on the liner, but Demon Slayer kind of got started, what, 2016 or 2015 or something like that? Freaking rare to have this happen to it. That just shows you just how insanely popular that whole entire franchise has gotten, really does. But of course, you got the one side of, okay, that's kind of neat news, and then you got the other side that's like, well, that's unfortunate. So somebody, a woman in Japan, got charged with selling 6.5 million yen in unauthorized Demon Slayer cakes. Going to assume, yeah, it's. I think you gotta get that. I think you gotta get that regulated. I think that's what you gotta do. And unfortunately, she did not, and so she got charged about that. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, since
to get
I know that Creative Commons, or the idea that you can take something for copyright and like remix it. If it's non-commercial, I know that that's a different concept between the U.S. and Japan. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What else have we not talked about yet that the internet simply needs to know about? So, I don't understand Fortnite. I mean, I know it is a popular MMORPG, except not really an RPG. It's just sort of like shooting game. It appears to be kind of like Halo, but probably with better online capabilities than Halo ever had.
And I know
that people keep suing Fortnite for stealing their dances. But I didn't realize that they had started like incorporating like characters from other franchises into there as like skins you can buy and stuff. Anyway, so now they have Naruto in there, which has led to a lot of people making the joke online, Naruto's out of chakra, but he's not out of options. Picture of Naruto with a gun.
I think I saw they had like online Sasuke doing some sort of dance.
Yes, he was doing the one. I saw a video of him doing the one to Montero, you know, the little Nas X song.
Like, I don't think Kishimoto, when he created the series, expected anything like this to happen in any shape or fashion.
But he's probably making money off of it.
He is definitely.
We haven't heard yet about Shueisha trying to sue the pants off of Fortnite for doing this.
No, they probably were. They were probably like, "Yes, please do."
Yeah, and speaking of, creator did not know what was going on. I'm pretty sure this is about like a current adaptation, not the adaptation from like 10 years ago. But on Twitter, Gantz manga creator Hiro Aku shared the news that. Oh yeah, this is for a new adaptation that Julius Avery is going to direct Sony's planned live-action adaptation of Gantz, and then added, "This is my first time hearing it." He clarified in a follow-up tweet that he agreed to the contract a long time ago, but he did not know things were moving along. But that is
no,
just...
this is true.
This is very funny to me. You know,
This is true. This is true. He did an interview.
Well,
with
it's like
he. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Does he not like to be involved? Since otherwise you would think people would be sending him an email being like, "Hey, yeah, we've inked this part of the contract. So-and-so is going to be directing it. You know, please don't post anything on social media until we do. Yada, yada, yada." That's what you'd think would happen.
Well, again, like I talk about the Hollywood anime, just how stuff just takes so long to get hammered and stuff like that. This could be a case here. But then also, Kosher did an interview with him a couple months ago, and he was saying he didn't hear anything about Gantz in general. So it's not surprising that he would actually put this out and say that, because nothing with radio silence on that end.
Yeah, this really sounds like somebody over on Sony Pictures like needs to be like in better communication with him. Which, the older I get, the more I realize that communication is not a skill that everybody is born with. Looking at you, some of my coworkers, but I don't know, I just still found it very funny that he's just tweeting like, "Yep, this is the first I've heard of it. Hope it goes well." Though, of course, this guy's already made so much money off of the series, I think, that he probably...
Yes.
He probably can be a little more cavalier about it. Doesn't have to be, like, you know, constantly sucking up saying, "Oh, yes, I'm so excited for this, yada, yada, yada." Yeah. Since, again, this is not even the first live-action adaptation. I remember there was definitely one when I was in college around, like, 2011? I don't know. I don't Gantz, so I don't remember anything beyond that. I did not go to see it because it was going to be like a 3-hour drive, because that's how the North Carolina mountains work.
And then, and final bit of weird news, if you want to see the big Godzilla, and then also you're going to see Hamtaro at the same time or back to back. Yes, you can actually do that in Japan. So yes, it's going to be a double screening of Godzilla and Hamtaro to celebrate the 20th anniversary of an interesting combination. So back in December 2001, the Fusion Films Godzilla, Mothra and King Ghidorah, Giant Mothers all out attacking Hamtaro Adventures in Ham Land screened alongside each other in theaters. And now they're doing it again. It is now happening again. Those cute Hamtaro rats are now also teaming up with
hamsters.
Hamsters, okay. Hamsters. I totally forgot. Yeah, Hamtaro hamsters. I'm losing my mind. But yes, they were screaming back to back. So that's very much an unusual combination. But hey, I guess it fits. They did a collaboration years ago, somewhat.
I just want to know if this is a better combination or a worse combination than that infamous one of the double feature Grave of the Fireflies, My Neighbor Totoro.
That's funny.
I'm pretty sure that's how those two were originally released in
Japan.
I wonder which direction is better to see those in. Do you want to be depressed first or depressed after, you know?
It's like you're depressed, but then you get uplifted. I don't know.
Can you even be uplifted, you know, the next couple of hours within seeing, you know, Grave of the Fireflies?
I still hurt over everything that happened in Grave of the Fireflies. I still do.
I still have not seen it because I'm not ready for that level of hurt.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say, like, okay, you haven't seen it, but then you're like, okay, I get it.
I understand it is a lot of hurt, and I just do not wish to engage with that. But anyway, folks, that wraps us up for the past 2 weeks, and oh my god. Justin, we're going to do this all over again in another 2 weeks.
Another 2 weeks. We got to talk about something that happened, and we're just going to be like, why? Why did X happen to this company when it could have just done better? Ugh. But yes, we are finally done with this episode.
So, folks, if you want to follow us online, you can follow us on Twitter at the OASG. You can also follow me on Twitter at Wandering Dreamer. And the other podcast I co-host is on Twitter at Mog in Your Ears. On our latest episode, we talked about Comey Can't Communicate and also Astro Lost in Space. We've got both a spoiler-free and a spoilerific section of Astro Lost in Space. April hadn't finished reading the series yet, so it's just me and Corey talking in the spoilerific session. But
you kind of need a spoiler for that one. You did.
Yeah, at first Corey was like, "I don't know if we're going to need to," and I'm thinking, "Yes, we are going to."
especially since it's not one but two of them. So.
Yeah, it's funny. He was saying, "Yeah, I watched the anime, and then I think I stopped like the episode before stuff started getting twisty." But yes, you can follow us all over there, and you can also follow the blog, theoasg.com, via RSS feeds. We've got an email subscription you can sign up to. Obviously, you can follow us on our Twitter account. Facebook's still active, I think. I don't think we're really engaged in any other social medias, are we?
There's supposedly Instagram, but I have not used it in, like, a good year or so.
Okay.
So that, no. you can find me on Twitter at Kami_Nomi. Actually, we'll be posting stuff aside from just Fire Emblem. I will be doing stuff aside from retrieving Fire Emblem Three Houses art. I'll be posting the
artwork. But you still gotta show me all the stuff I bought. All the art you bought.
I'll be posting the art of of what I bought from the anime New York City.
Since Justin was saying I don't have any more space, and I was like, just get one of those binders like Arts and the Artist Alley use and just put your art there. And you went, oh no.
One of the worst things she told me was to get a binder, and I'm like, why would you do this to me?
Listen, why? I wasn't even the one who came up with that idea originally. It's just my fault you hadn't seen it elsewhere on the internet first.
But yes, because of that, I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to go a little crazy. But I actually probably think I went a little too crazy this time. I know I can convince myself it was making up for lost time, but still.
You're supporting small artists, Justin. You're engaging in American capitalism.
That is true. I am at least supporting the local artists and the artists that took their time to come from wherever they came from to make money. And from what I saw when I was going to RSLE, they made money. Good. So, okay. Until next time, everybody. See you later.
Bye.